You are listening to the Trust Podcast, a safe space to dialogue around disconnection and reconnections in our present time. Find out more at trustcollaboration.com.
This is a photograph of two men on a metro. On the left, a man is well-dressed with shiny shoes. He has a full briefcase. He has a nice soft scarf around his neck and he's walking towards the exit. On the right is an older man sitting on a chair watching the man leave, and he looks very poor. This man on the right has very dirty clothes on. He has no shoelaces in his shoes. He has no socks. His trousers look as if they're falling down and revealing his bare skin. And he has a little pile of belongings next to him on the chair. And he's holding a piece of paper in his hands. And he looks very ragged.
So welcome everybody to this new episode of the Trust Podcast. Today's topic is social disconnection. Can we focus on the origin of this disconnection to stop shaping the social disruption we are witnessing nowadays? The speakers with us today are Diego Isabel de la Moneda, co-founder of the Global Hub for the Common Good Foundation and director of the NESI Forum for New Economy and Social Innovation. Also, he's an advisor to various international new economy networks and has been elected as member of the Responsible Leader Network of the BMW Foundation. And with him is Maria Garcia Alvarez, a lecturer in geopolitics and globalization, rhetoric, global challenges and emergent futures at the Windesheim Honor College. Plus, she's a certified educator for sustainability by the UN Peace Earth Charter. And she's in the advisory board for the EU Research Project Trust that is hosting this podcast, and member of the SDSN, the UN Sustainable Development Solution Network. So welcome everybody, Diego and Maria. I may ask you to share your emotion looking and listening to the description of the photo.
Yeah, should I start?
Sí.
I think today you said that we're going to talk about social disconnection, and that is a little bit what exactly I see in this picture, right? We see this every time we take the public transport, how we don't look at each other and we don't talk to each other. And sometimes even when you smile to someone, you can see the other person. Sometimes it's even uncomfortable that you're going to start a conversation. And this is sad when you think like how plants communicate to each other, even being different kind of plants. They all have a system to communicate and interact with each other and care for each other. So it makes me a little bit sad.
Thank you, Maria. Diego, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with Maria with the feeling of sadness, and I would add a feeling of loneliness because you are with more people in the same carriage in this case, but you feel alone. You don't look to the eyes to the rest of the people, as Maria said. And also a feeling of routine. You know, every day is the same. You cannot remember what happened the day before or the day before, in the metro, the underground or the bus, because it's always the same, the time that you are in the public transport because you are going or coming back from your work to your house, but it's always the same, it's a routine. So a deep feeling of loneliness.
Yeah, I can relate to this as well. But let me dive into the very topic then. So what are the consequences of those disconnection, the loneliness and the sadness that this social disruption is bringing with this? What is the worst result to expect? And if we don't act now, what should be happening then?
Well, I think how far we can go, right, with this disconnection from each other. I think we have seen the results we have so far of our disconnection among people going through a more polarized world, a conflict, or social conflict that is becoming even a tension in our daily routine, or we're making out of our routine also this kind of tension between each other. And then the disconnection with the ecosystem is taking us to more than 85% of biodiversity loss. The problems we have obviously with climate change that we cannot keep ignoring. So if this is what we have so far, how much evidence do we need of, you know, what will happen in 10 years from now if we continue this disconnection, creating this bigger gap? I think everything around us is like red flags. And I wonder, why are we not able to see them, or only a few of us are seeing them?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that with this social disconnection, we are coming to a lot of risks, because the social disconnection is, I can see it as a triple disconnection. The first one is the disconnection with the others. The second one is the disconnection with nature. And the third one is disconnection with yourself. And probably this last one is the most important, because when you disconnect from who you are, who you really are, then it's really impossible to be connected with others or with nature. And as Maria said, we are living a quite dangerous time. Unfortunately, it's really easy to imagine a very dystopian future with horrible things coming to our lives because of this tension that Maria was saying. And it's quite difficult to think in a utopian future. So even being an optimistic person, each time, each month, each year, it's more difficult to imagine that we are going to be able to change this tendency and to really build together a better future. And on the other side, it's quite easy to imagine destroying together our future.
Yeah. It's like we are in a, I have the feeling that we have to make a choice and we're not daring, you know, and especially that I work with young people, I have the feeling that it's something that is holding us from this position to action, you know. We're so good in thinking, but it's about doing, and there's something that's holding us back. And I don't know, sometimes I get frustrated because I don't know, how many red flags do we need? How many warnings around us do we need?
Yeah. This is interesting, because I would have agreed a few months ago, but then after the pandemic, I realized that maybe we are in a wonderful opportunity to tap into a collective sadness, a collective loneliness, no? Leveling all types of economic income or social condition or spiritual condition. I mean, maybe this time could have been also used to create a possible future different from the one we are co-producing now, even without knowing that each of us is doing a part in this connection. What do you think about, like, the reality of your daily embodiment of the values you highlighted, and what do you think we can create from here?
I totally agree with you, and I sense that as well. But more than the opportunity for this tapping into not only the collective sadness and what do we do with it, but, you know, the collective wisdom that we also have, I think more even than an opportunity is a need, right? I see the need to reconnect again. I see the need to break through this loneliness. But my problem, or I'm becoming a little bit pessimistic, is to which extent have we cared to create the path that can allow us to do so? Because at the same time, we're really fighting with a society and a political class that is not making this easy. It seems sometimes really that they are working against us, you know, working against that recognition. And that really worries me, especially for the young people, because we're losing the hope. And that is a dangerous moment when you lose hope, right? Because then that is, for me, fuel for action, fuel for doing. But maybe I'm too pessimistic.
I think we are realistic, but you know, I consider myself an optimistic person. But I agree with Maria that even we have the opportunity, as Julia said, to build something better. But you look around yourself, you switch on the TV and listen to the news and the politicians and so on and so far, and it's really difficult to find a light of hope and what's going to happen. And we discuss about that, we talk about that, but what is the action? And the action that you can see around you is violence and conflict and tension. So maybe things should be a little bit worse. Maybe we need more financial crisis, pandemics, to realize that we need to change the way that we are living. And here I agree with Maria that maybe young people always, a long history, young people were the people trying to improve the life and the future. And nowadays it's really difficult to find young people really taking action. So this is really something to be concerned about. Though I think that probably we need to give them the opportunity to talk and to raise their voices and to do things, because of course adults, we are not doing it in the right way, because otherwise we wouldn't be in the situation that we are. So I think that this crisis is a big opportunity. I agree with that, but I also agree with Maria that it's difficult to see what is the hope of which is the next one step that we need to take in a systemic way, not just in your individual action, because many people are doing beautiful things every day, but maybe in a systemic way, it's difficult to see what should happen, to change politics, to change the economic system, to change everything that is around us. Yeah.
You were anticipating actually my next question, because you are one of the example of individual action that nevertheless acts on the system. For instance, Maria, you are the creator of the Value Creator, that is a course that is really changing the pedagogy and the way we are teaching students. So it's not a teacher-centric, neither student-centric, but is really activating an ecosystem of knowledge to understand that sustainability is far more than planting a tree, but as Diego was saying, is this connection that involves both the social, the economic, and the spiritual realm. So, for instance, Maria, you can tell us, how do you do to connect, to impulse, to get young people engaged in those kind of conversations? And action, hopefully.
Well, I think you mentioned Value Creators when we designed this concept. So it's not only me, but a team of other teachers. We wanted a concept that it was, okay, stop, you know, putting all these classes, and knowledge should be a tool, not a goal. And let's get them moving, you know, let's get them doing. And they can fail, because also I think in education, we have created systems where fail is almost not allowed. And that's a pity, because I think probably this is one of the biggest issues with young people. They are so afraid to fail. That's what sometimes they prefer not to do anything, that to do in a decade that we need action more than ever, right? So even here in the Netherlands, they have a word for that, Faalangst, to define this fear of failing or doing something wrong. And I think we need much more learning environments that encourage our students to go there to get their hands dirty outside of the classrooms, you know, cooperate really with the people that is doing already, changing, trying to change this world. And to give them back hope by showing them that sometimes, you know, you can change something small around you. And that creates waves of change that with the time could become bigger. I think sometimes young people think really big, or they feel the pressure that we expect from all of them to be a Nelson Mandela. And that is not true. But if you're changing yourself, you can change your family, your friends. Sometimes you can do something to change your neighborhood. That's what we're trying to do. I think there's a lot of people in education trying to do this. It's still constraints around us, bureaucracy, bigger system, make sometimes these things really difficult. But I think we need to try, and I think the students need to learn with people also like Diego. That's what we love for them, to be engaged with real networks and see what other people, professionals, are doing. Is the action for doing, you know, is the decade for action, I mean.
Indeed, there is this famous quote by, you know, Margaret Mead that says, never underestimate the power of a small group of committed people to change the world. In fact, yeah. It is the only thing that ever has, both in a good sense or in a bad sense. Take Hitler or take, I don't know, Gandhi. So it's really about them being contagious, speaking about pandemics nowadays. But I would also like to hear from Diego about his leverage point to involve and engage leaders rather than young people. How about your strategies with the NESI forum?
Yeah, I what we are doing in the NESI Forum of New Economy and Social Innovation, we believe that if we want to protect nature, we want to eradicate inequalities, we really need to change the economy, because the economy, the current system brought us many good things, but at the same time there are some failures that we all agree on, such as climate change that is created because of our lifestyle and economic system, or many rising inequalities. So we really are working in transforming the system, in thinking how to transform power and empowering every consumer and citizen, because we have the power to decide what we buy, what kind of products, or what we don't buy, because we don't need to consume so much. And also to empower businesses to really behave in a different way, and also to develop innovative public policies to really transform the economic system. That's what we are doing. But my invitation today, listening to Maria and to yourself and your questions, my invitation today to each one that is listening to us is, go out and join as many small groups, as you said, as in your neighborhood, with your classmates, with your friends, with your family, and ask them, what can we do together? Because we know that we need to improve things. What can we do together? And involve in as many small groups as you can, not only in one small group. They try to make the right question, and probably your friends, your relatives, or your classmates will start to inspire you with really good answers, and then you can find what is the one thing that you can do together that you cannot do by yourself. And that can be a small thing in your neighborhood, that could be a small thing in your school or whatever, or in your company or whatever you are involved. Come together with many different people and try to enjoy diversity, not only with one group of people, with different kind of people, because that will enrich you and that will allow you to increase the impact that you can do with the actions that you start.
Thank you very much, Diego. Maybe a last question before leaving the floor to the students. Curiosity. What is the, I would say, the hook you have for bringing leaders, so high-level decision maker, into your boat, let's say? And would be the same question to Maria. Which is the hook you are using to get young people interested in this kind of discussion and actions? You have a magic word, or I don't know, some candies over there.
I don't have magic words. I think for the student is, I try to change their worldviews, to challenge them at least, and to make them feel the urgency of the moment. You know, we teach the Earth Charter, which is a document that has 20 years, that already in the preamble of the Earth Charter is pointing out to the urgency of the moment 20 years ago. But now it really, we're running out of time. And I think that is, the pressure this generation should have. And I think we should not be naive. Should, you know, sometimes my students say, oh, we get depressed from your lessons. Yeah, well, welcome to the world. You know, we have to stop buttering and putting sugar coating everything we say to young people. Someone has to tell them the crude reality, you know, and the urgency of this moment. That's my magic word. We're running out of time.
Yeah, in my case, as I we are working more with adults than with young people, unfortunately. There are different ways to make them think in a different way, but one that I like is to talk and to ask them about the legacy that they want to leave to their grandsons or granddaughters, because they are business people or they are policymakers or politicians, and they are very involved in the things that they are doing today. They are not thinking so much about the future in the works, but when you ask them, what do you think, as things are going on, that your grandsons or granddaughter will think about you because you are a very powerful person? They will not be proud of you. They will not be proud of their grandfather or grandmother. And you probably don't want that. So start to rethink how to behave and how to use your power to really make your grandsons and granddaughters proud of you and proud of the people that are living nowadays. And then they look at you in a very different way, because they realize that probably they are being so selfish that they are even being a problem for the future generations, but not as future generations, as their future families and relatives. So that's something that is, it works. It really works.
Wow. This sounds as a very concrete urgency as the one of Maria as well. So I leave the floor to Ege Kanyazici, that is a newly graduate junior architect from Politecnico di Torino, now in Istanbul. So please, Ege, would you like to ask something to our guest speaker today?
Hello. First of all, I would like to thank you for joining this very interesting discussion. I would like to ask you a general question regarding the global scale impact of social disconnections that we're facing today. Do you think that it is possible to tackle the issues regarding social disconnection within the framework of our current economic, social, and political structures? Is it possible to progress towards a more socially connected future with modifications to these structures, or do you think that a reform is necessary?
Okay, this is a very systemic and difficult question. Thank you. Yes, we need a reform. We need a new social contract. You know, the social contract that we're living with is that if you get a job and you start working really hard, on exchange, the society will allow you education, a health system, and getting a house, and also having time for some leisure. But now that social contract is totally broken, because not many people is allowed to get that. Even if you are working hard every day, you don't have the time to enjoy your family and friends or nature. You don't have the resources to get a house for yourself. So even that social contract that was built in the 40s or 50s after the Second World War is totally destroyed. So we need a new social contract. And for that, we need a very deep discussion and conversation in our society that is not, it isn't going on. So we are not discussing about what I offer to the community, what I expect from the community. And so we are just living in tension because that social contract is broken. So we need to really rethink about that, about the future of work, because it's not going to be the same that is now. We are not, the young people is not going to be working for one company for all their lives. That was the promise probably for Maria, for myself when we were young people. Now it's different. Probably you will have different works at the same time, and that could be good. But then we need to change the social contract, to change many things, and policymakers are not discussing about this. So yes, we need a very deep reform. Exactly how, I don't know. That is the discussion that we need to address.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And for me, it would be important to see the role that education is going to play in all that, the role of academia. I think if we sustain this system, we won't advance, because even us in the universities are working from a capitalistic neoliberal way of operating. We are creating and educating people to feed the needs of a market and an industry. And I think this needs to change. We are constructing, you know, competence-based curriculum. And I think we need to move to consciousness-based curriculum and start not only educating. I'm not saying professions are not important or discipline is not important, but we have to also understand that it will become more and more transdisciplinary. As Diego was saying, the work market is going to change completely. And we cannot underestimate the impact that also artificial intelligence is going to have on technology in that transformation. So we need also to go beyond discipline and to educate not human capital, but human beings, citizens of the world, that are able to be part of the transformation. So we need to rethink the whole concept. And it's interesting because I teach emerging futures and I ask my students to read the reports that the European Union is publishing, the Global Trends 2030. The World Forum for Economic has also published a report. And in a subtle way, all these reports are mentioning a revolution that it has to do with the social contract. So we will go through a certain destruction to be able to reconstruct again from another perspective, because in the framework we have now, the answer would be no, it's not then change possible.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you, Aga, for the question. It was really interesting to point at the systemic level. So it's like you want to add your app on the phone, but your phone has an older operating system, so it doesn't work. So you have to really change the OS version to install a new app. So I can leave the floor now to Valerie Aldo, that is an emotional intelligence trainer, to listen now on a physical level with a mindful practice, what we have listened to a mental and maybe emotional level too. So Valerie, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for everyone. It was so inspiring. And I really thought, well, how can we start now and how much can we do? So I invite you for a meditation, which is called Metta Meditation. Metta means boundless friendliness. And it's one of the pillars of the Buddhism, which is meant to reduce loneliness, where we started from the beginning on, connects to self and connect to others. So I invite you just take a little distance and just sit comfortably on the seat where you're sitting in and just feel your feet on the ground. And just feel what all this discussion and the information had done to yourself. How do you feel it in the body? You might need to breathe deeply and just with a big sigh, breathe out. And I just invite you to feel, what does it do to your body to listen to this disconnection and the need of connection? This boundless friendliness meditation will be done in 5 categories. I will tell you well-wishing sentences and I invite you to repeat them silently. And we will use different categories, first directing these friendly words to ourselves, then to a friend and a loved person, then to a person in this podcast, then to a challenging person, and finally to a group of person. So we will brighten and widen each time more the friendliness and wishing to connect to others. So let's start. Bring up before your mind's eye an image of yourself. It could be an image of nowadays, or it could be even from a former time in your life. And I invite you to repeat after me silently. May I be healthy. May I feel safe and full of hope. May I be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And the second round, may I be healthy. May I feel safe and full of hope. May I be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And let go this image of yourself. And bring up the image of a friend, of a loved one. And let's just direct and address these friendly words to that person. May you be healthy. May you feel safe and full of hope. May you be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And again, may you be healthy. May you feel safe and full of hope. May you be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And again, let's go and let the image of that person go. And invite the image of a person of the podcast before your mind's eye. And send also this person the best wishes. May you be healthy. May you feel safe and full of hope. May you be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. May you be healthy. May you feel safe and full of hope. May you be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And let go the image of that person. And let's invite the image of a challenging person. Better not using your lifetime rival, but a person that you might be annoyed with or something that you don't like about that person. And learn also to send this person. May you be healthy. May you feel safe and full of hope. May you be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And again, may you be healthy. May you feel safe and full of hope. May you be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. And let go the image of that challenging person and open up to a group of persons. It might be your neighborhood, it may be the place where you're staying, it might be a co-working group or group you wish really, as Julia said before, create something bigger. And let's send them these friendly words. May we all be healthy. May we all feel safe and full of hope. May we all be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. May we all be healthy. May we all be safe and full of hope. May we be guided by a clear heart and towards a collective wisdom. Let also go now this image of this group And again, connected to yourself, to the space you're sitting in, with your feet on the ground, and connect to your body. How is it now? How much can you do? How much do you feel strength, hope, and being connected? And for closing now this podcast, I invite now each of you to wrap up your experience with the three words. So the first words that pop up, don't overthink too much. And I will just start with Ege. Please, can you just find or give us the three words that make the resume of that podcast?
Reform, urgency, and collaboration.
Thank you. What about you, Maria? What would you say?
I will go for transformation, reconnection, and loads of hope.
Thank you, Maria. What about you, Diego? What would you say?
I would say connection, action, and peace.
Thank you. Thank you all. It's been fantastic having you here. Thank you.